Anytime you consume less than 3,000 milligrams of sodium, which is about like 1.5 teaspoons of salt, there's a lot of harms that start happening. Dehydration, less energy, an increase in stress hormones like adrenaline and noradrenaline. Insulin levels will increase, literally inducing insulin resistance. The hyperactivated dopamine system in the brain. To sugar addiction, with headaches and migraines, to magnesium deficiency. Even blood pressure can go up, which is never talked about.
Wow, okay. Hey, and welcome back to the Inkaland podcast. So what's new? I'm thinking of starting solo episodes in addition to the guest interviews. So you might be seeing those or hearing those in the future in this channel too. And if you're not yet subscribed to my newsletter, then you can do so by going to inkaland.co/newsletter. In my weekly mails, I share new science on mental and brain health and content updates. So here's the deal about today's episode. When I started reading the book Salt Fix, I had no clue how it would dramatically change the way I think about my salt use, electrolytes, and the general salt recommendations. So my guest is the author of the book Salt Fix, Dr. James DiNicolantonio. He holds a Doctor of Pharmacy degree and is a globally recognized cardiovascular research scientist. His research contributions include co-authoring more than 300 peer-reviewed scientific articles. He's also a valued member of the editorial advisory boards for various high-quality medical journals. In addition to his contributions to science, he has authored 9 best-selling health books, including The Salt Fix, Superfuel, The Longevity Solution, The Immunity Fix, and a couple others. And his health education in Instagram has gathered an impressive following of over 2.5 million people. So in this episode, Dr. DiNicolantonio covers the practical aspects of salt use, sodium balance, magnesium, and electrolytes. Dr. DiNicolantonio explains why most people might actually be sodium deficient and what modern day symptoms can be explained by salt deficiency, including insulin resistance, sugar addiction, high blood pressure, headaches, cramps, and fatigue. We cover the background of government recommendations for salt use and how these are challenged by the most recent research. We cover electrolytes, electrolyte balance, and the best sources for electrolytes too. Finally, Dr. DiNicolantonio shares his own protocols for optimizing electrolyte balance. This episode was really mind-blowing. It's full of practical, useful tips about salt use, and I really hope that you enjoy this discussion as much as I did. Okay, James, thank you so much for taking time for this interview today.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
So most people think about salt as something that we put into our food and that makes food taste good, maybe, and that raises blood pressure if we overeat it. So I thought it would be a good idea today to discuss about sodium as the essential and absolutely vital nutrient in our human body, and what we can do to fix salt balance in the body. And if we have time, maybe talk a little bit about electrolytes in general. So could you first explain why did you become interested in sodium per se and salt, and what inspired you to write the book Salt Fix?
Yeah, there were a couple of reasons why. One was that I wrestled and ran cross country in high school. And so utilizing salt for enhancing athletic performance was always kind of important to me. And also as a community pharmacist, I had a lot of patients on blood pressure medications or had been told by their doctor to cut their salt intake. And a lot of times it actually led to more harm than good. And that's really kind of what propelled me to, you know, write the book and really look into the literature about salt.
Right. Can you explain what is sodium, like as a nutrient, how this relates to the amount of salt we eat? And how does this relate to the salt balance in the body?
Yeah, that's a good question. So salt is made up of sodium and chloride. By weight, it's 40% sodium, 60% chloride. And sodium's main role is basically to hydrate the body, to give us a blood pressure so that we can actually perfuse our organs and have blood flow to our tissues, oxygenate our tissues, have a heartbeat. have nerve transmissions, things like that. So sodium is basically the your hydration mineral because it's osmotically active, which means it pulls water with it.
Okay, and how much there is sodium in table salt?
So 1 teaspoon of salt will have about 2,300 milligrams of sodium. So if you ever want to figure out or calculate how much sodium is in salt, you basically just divide salt by 2.5, and that will give you how much sodium is in that amount of salt.
Okay, great. Thank you. I think that's a very good like elaboration, because often when we think about salt, at least for me, it was before I dove into this topic and especially read your book, I'm just thinking salt and sodium almost synonymously, whereas if it is not. So that's a good elaboration. So the general health guidelines is usually that we should eat as little salt as possible, or that many people should reduce the salt intake. But according to your extensive research, you have found that, and your experience, as you said, you have found that actually quite a lot of people would benefit from eating more salt. So how this misconception about sodium came into existence, and what do we know now, maybe better?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So basically a lot of our health guidelines started in 1980 and came from the 1977 dietary goals. So there were certain recommendations. One was low salt. The other was to eat low amounts of fat, low saturated fat, eat a high carb diet. And these recommendations came based off of opinion, not scientific fact, because you didn't have the Cochrane collaboration established until 1993, which is the gold standard group that will conduct systematic reviews and meta-analyses of clinical trials. So we got most of our dietary advice back in 1977. Okay. But the Cochrane group wasn't even formed until 1993. So anything really before 1993, you have to really question, where does this information come from? Mostly it comes from hypertensive groups on a severe salt restricted diet and only looking at blood pressure. But if you recommend that to the general population, you might not get the same effects. And in fact, you don't. So 80% of people with normal blood pressure are not salt sensitive. 75% of people with pre-hypertension are not salt sensitive, meaning a normal salt intake won't significantly increase their blood pressure. And even hypertensive patients, only about 45 to 50% of them are salt sensitive. So it's really a small percentage of people that are salt sensitive. And then even in those individuals, it's actually more important to figure out what's causing them to retain salt and fluid, because a normal kidney will excrete even up to 100 grams of salt per day. And typically what it comes down to is overconsuming refined carbs and sugars, or not eating enough magnesium or potassium. And when people who are salt sensitive fix those things, usually their salt sensitivity goes away.
What did you mean by normal intake of salt in this group? You said that normal people, or like healthy person, is not salt sensitive with normal intake of salt. What is the normal intake of salt?
Yeah. So there's been many studies done usually across about 50 different types of populations. Most populations consume anywhere between like 3,000 and 4,000 milligrams of sodium, which is considered a normal amount of salt. Every dietary guideline, however, recommends that the upper limit be 2,300 milligrams, and the American Heart Association is even more restrictive, and they only recommend less than. They don't even have a minimum amount that you should consume. They just have a less than 1,500 milligrams. So they're very restrictive. But anytime you consume less than 3,000 milligrams of sodium, which is about like 1.5 teaspoons of salt, when you start consuming less than that per day, there's a lot of harms that start happening. So you get an increase in stress hormones like adrenaline and noradrenaline, aldosterone, which is an artery stiffening hormone, increases, angiotensin II, which will raise blood pressure and stiffen the arteries as well, will increase. Insulin levels will increase when you start reducing your salt intake. Even blood pressure can go up. So in normal people with normal blood pressure, half of them will have an increase in blood pressure when they restrict their salt intake, which is never talked about, and about half will have a decrease. And when you take the sum, you'll see like a very, very tiny reduction, like 0.1 millimeters of mercury. But when you actually look at the individual blood pressure responses, it's like this, like half the group had an increase from baseline and half the group had like a decrease. So it looks like this. So it's really interesting that when you really dig into it, even the blood pressure lowering benefits are probably a harm because it's just volume depleting the person. You're just dehydrating that person, which isn't a good reduction in blood pressure.
Right. So you said that low sodium intake can actually cause dehydration as well. Yeah.
Yes. I had mentioned that sodium is osmotically active, which means it pulls water with it. So you will be able to absorb water better. It increases the thirst signal as well. So a lot of, especially elderly people, their thirst mechanism is dysfunctional. So they won't drink enough water throughout the day. So salt will increase and improve the thirst mechanism. So you drink more fluid. And it also helps you retain more fluid as well. So you're absorbing more water, but you're also retaining more water as well. And that will improve blood volume, which will improve blood flow to the organs. And that is how you literally hydrate yourself better.
Okay. You also mentioned about insulin and blood sugar. Mm-hmm. So how can we maybe improve our insulin sensitivity, make sure that we don't get insulin resistance by optimizing our salt intake? What's the relationship here?
Yeah. So when you cut your salt intake, your kidneys want to try to hold on to salt now. So it will raise insulin levels as a protective mechanism to hold on to the salt that you're consuming. At the same time, low salt diets, like I had mentioned previously, will activate the sympathetic nervous system and increase stress hormones like noradrenaline and adrenaline. So those catecholamines will actually constrict the blood vessels and reduce blood glucose and insulin delivery to the skeletal muscle, literally inducing insulin resistance through that mechanism as well. So you have an increase in insulin levels to preserve sodium at the kidney level. You have an increase in catecholamines, like noradrenaline and adrenaline, which constricts the blood vessels and decreases blood glucose and insulin delivery to the skeletal muscle. And the catecholamines will also increase glucose production from the liver. So gluconeogenesis and glucose production from the liver will increase as well on a low salt intake.
Right. Okay. So this might be a little bit of I'm not sure if it's related, but you just mentioned that you have an increase in the sympathetic nervous system tone. So if you are stressed, if you eat low salt, can you also have depletion, like increased depletion in things like magnesium or potassium, just because you are in higher states of distress?
Yeah, it's a good question. So two things. One, from a stress response from, let's say, a catecholamine response, an increase in noradrenaline, If we want to actually say, well, is this clinically meaningful? Does it actually affect people? So there was one study that looked at it was a sleep study, and people that were put on a low salt diet because of the activation of the sympathetic nervous system had a worsening in their sleep. So we know that actually from a clinical perspective, this increase in sympathetic nervous system is a true stress response and can even affect sleep. The other question that you asked is, could a low salt diet increase stress through decreasing magnesium and things like that? There have been actually a few, at least three balance studies that have looked at consuming a low salt diet. Basically, it was about 2,200 milligrams of sodium, which isn't even super restrictive. But even that was enough to lead to sodium depletion, which caused the body to pull sodium from the bone, but it also pulled magnesium and calcium from the bone at the same time, because it activates what's called osteoclasts, which will strip the bone. And they're not sodium specific. They will just strip the whole bone for minerals. And low salt diets in those balance studies were shown in numerous clinical trials to lead to a negative calcium and magnesium balance simply by not getting enough salt in your diet.
Right. Okay. So salt is very important for so many reasons. One interesting thing in your book that you discussed was salt cravings and sugar cravings and how they are very different in nature, even though many people would maybe naturally assume that, okay, it means some sort of a dopaminergic addiction or whatnot. But salt cravings are actually a physiological signal from your body to say that maybe I need more salt. So can you explain what are salt cravings? What is a salt set point, and how does salt cravings relate to your salt intake needs?
Yeah, so there's good questions. The salt set point is sort of like this physiological predetermined set point where if you basically feel your best at a certain level of salt intake, just kind of like you feel your best at a certain amount of like a glycogen repletion, your body feels best at a certain amount of salt intake. And animals, from a physiological standpoint, have to have some type of mechanism to tell them when they're deficient in salt, because it's an essential nutrient that if you don't get enough of it, you will die. So the only really smart enough organ that could tell an animal to go out and seek out something would be the brain and the reward center of the brain. And it turns out that when you don't get enough salt, the dopamine center in the brain is hyperactivated. That way, if an animal found salt in the diet, it would get a better reward from it. It would light up the brain better, and thus the animal would consume more of it and wouldn't die from salt depletion. Unfortunately, when you have this hyperactive dopamine system in the brain, other things that activate the dopamine system, like sugar, like things like cocaine and other addictive drugs, but also even controlled substances like Adderall and things like that for attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, are more stimulating and more addicting. So low salt diets can potentially predispose to sugar addiction, but also to drug addiction as well, because it enhances the reward center in the brain.
Wow. Okay. So you also discussed about the fact that by just increasing the salt intake, you can reduce your sugar cravings. So is this where it relates to?
Yeah. So the craving is coming from the hyperactivated system, dopamine system in the brain. And so you can calm that down by just consuming a normal amount of salt. And a lot of people too, who are craving sugar, will just put some salt on their tongue, and that will quickly downregulate the reward center in the brain and will reduce sugar cravings. Like one thing that works well for me is either pickle juice. If I have a sugar craving, salt on the tongue works really well too, or something like Relight, which is just basically an electrolyte powder that tastes really good. That will decrease sugar cravings as well.
I think that's amazing. I think this is very little discussed sort of hack to sugar cravings, because I get a lot of questions on how to reduce sugar cravings. And before actually reading your book, I never even thought that take salt and that reduces the sugar cravings. But now I know better, which is cool. Okay, so what other modern day symptoms can relate to too low sodium intake?
Yeah, so modern day symptoms, the first one would be from a dehydration, which is essentially blood volume depletion. So you will just have less energy because you're having less blood flow to the brain. Your cognition will go down. People will say brain fog, but it's really just reduced blood flow to the brain, decreasing cognition, short-term recall. Your mood will be affected, so poor mood as well. Those are kind of like the more cognitive things. But we talked about sleep disturbances as well if you don't get enough salt. Your exercise performance and fatigue will suffer if you don't get enough salt. Headaches, especially most people with headaches and migraines, they are probably magnesium deficient, but a lot of it also is salt deficient and not having a good enough blood volume, and they're dehydrated, which is contributing to their headaches as well. So those are some of the symptoms, but you can also have muscle cramps, muscle spasms. Those are very common, especially if you are exercising, particularly in the heat. Salt is usually the number one factor that will improve muscle cramps and muscle spasms in that particular setting. Magnesium is obviously important as well. And we talked about how not getting enough salt can lead to magnesium deficiency as it gets pulled from the bone. And then that, of course, can lead to a plethora of similar symptoms that kind of coincide with a salt deficiency.
Right. So, do you think that if people are high in high amounts of stress, let's say, and using magnesium, it will benefit for also to use more salt, sort of to upregulate the magnesium as well?
Yeah, I think so. From the fact that like a stress, like if you're thinking about like what is a stress response? Actually, not getting enough salt leads to a stress response in the body because the adrenal glands actually have to overproduce aldosterone to reabsorb the sodium better, and that has been shown in animals to lead to adrenal hypertrophy and burnout. So you can lead to basically organ burnout, particularly the adrenals, which is literally a very stressful state on the body because you're not getting enough salt.
Right. So what's the relationship between actually salt and other electrolytes, or sodium and other electrolytes, and how would you optimize their balance intake for someone who is maybe an active person with health behaviors? So someone who is maybe there is like, fasting, many people are fasting these days, exercise, sauna. What kind of general guidelines for these kind of behaviors?
Yeah, try to remember what's called the rule of fours. Most people typically want 4 grams of sodium, 4 grams of potassium, and 400 milligrams of magnesium. That's a really good balance. You'll hear a lot of people throw out you want to have a 2-to-1 balance of potassium to sodium. I think that's too much. I think a 1-to-1 is fine as long as you're getting around 4 grams of potassium. You don't need 8 grams of potassium for 4 grams of sodium. That's like way too much, I think. I've always been fine on a 1-to-1 ratio. And then in regards to like where you should obtain these things, unrefined salts are better than refined salts, but ultimately the body still needs a set amount of salt. So whether it comes from an unrefined salt or not, the important thing is you are getting sodium and chloride. These electrolytes work together in balance with potassium. I kind of mentioned, like, if you're not getting enough potassium, then you will over retain salt. So it is important to get at least 3.5 grams or more of potassium. That way, your body can utilize sodium better. From a function perspective, salt and sodium work with potassium and magnesium from a hydration perspective as well, because magnesium and potassium are also osmotically active. In other words, it isn't just sodium that will pull water with it. Potassium and magnesium also do it, but they do it in the cell. So sodium is for hydration out of the cell. Potassium and magnesium is for hydration inside the cell. So if you don't get enough magnesium and potassium, you will be intracellularly dehydrated. So those, it is important. That's why I talked about the rule of fours to get around 400 milligrams of potassium and around 4 grams of, or 400 milligrams of magnesium and 4,000 milligrams of potassium, so that you can hydrate your cells appropriately.
Okay, a few questions. I want to discuss magnesium a little bit because that's a common depletion or deficiency, and many people are wondering which form and what to do with magnesium. But first, I want to know, how would you know that? Are you getting enough salt? Are you getting, or sodium? Are you getting too much? What happens if you get too much? Or can you get too much?
A normal healthy person, it's very difficult to get too much. There's been numerous clinical studies where they hyperdose salt in people who are not hypertensive. So people who have normal blood pressure, they went as high as 100 grams and they still couldn't even significantly raise their blood pressure, even at 100 grams of salt per day. Which again, I think that's somewhere around whatever 200 divided by 2.5, so like 40 grams of sodium per day. They did it for up to like a full week and they still never saw increases in blood pressure. So if you're a normal, healthy person, the kidneys are very capable of handling a tremendous amount of salt. And the reason is because the hard part for the kidneys is actually having to reabsorb all the salt that they filter. So the kidney has to filter a full teaspoon of salt every 5 minutes. And then it has to reabsorb all of that back, which requires ATP, and it's an active energy process to do. So that's actually really stressful on the kidneys to do that. So the more salt you consume, the less the kidneys have to reabsorb every 5 minutes. So actually having more salt can be a stress reliever on the kidneys. So it's very difficult to overdose on salt when you're healthy. Now that being said, if you are a lot of people are unhealthy, in you know, the United States or wherever, most people eat a processed food diet. Most people have high insulin levels. They over retain salt. So that's where the whole, okay, if you eat a low salt diet, your blood pressure might improve. But that you're not fixing the main problem, which is the high insulin. You drop the insulin, then your body can get the normal salt that it should be getting, because sodium has so many functions that you really don't want to limit salt just to have a lower blood pressure. That's really not a good sort of like strategy.
Right. So before starting to kind of tweak with the salt is to optimize insulin levels and blood sugar.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. So how do you measure salt? If I, let's say I wanted to now know if I have optimal sodium intake, what would I do?
Okay. No test is perfect. And what's interesting is actually looking at blood volume is a little bit better in regards to your sodium status than looking at your sodium levels in the blood. Because yes, if you are salt deficient or sodium deficient, your blood levels may be low, but they might not be low. And you can also drop sodium levels in the blood by over consuming free water too. You can be hyper loaded with water. If you have like heart failure or kidney disease, that will drop your sodium levels too. So sodium levels, you do want to look at those, but you also want to look at markers of blood volume, like hematocrit. If your hematocrit, which is a marker of the percentage of your red blood cells in the body, is high, that means your blood is basically volume depleted, as long as you're not losing blood. So looking at blood volume through surrogate markers like hematocrit is a good way to test if you are volume sufficient, which is a good way to test if you are salt sufficient, and also sodium levels in the blood. And then you can look at sodium a little bit in the urine and fractional sodium excretion too, but that's doesn't really measure your status. That's kind of more so looking at your more recent intake of salt.
Right. Okay. And can you also tell, before we go into the magnesium stuff, can you also tell about your routine? You have an active lifestyle, you do fasting, right? And exercise and everything. So how do you make sure that you get enough salt? What's your daily dose and daily routine?
Yeah, great question. The first thing I do in the morning is I take one scoop of Redmond Relight, which is about 800 milligrams of sodium with about 10 ounces of water. So your body just went 8 hours without consuming water or salt. You lose about 500 milligrams overnight of sodium in the urine. So getting back around 800 to 1,000 milligrams of sodium right away is a good way to kind of get your hydration status back. I'm off coffee now, but coffee is a big salt depleter, more than even water. So 4 cups of coffee will cause you to lose a half a teaspoon of salt. So two cups of coffee will cause you to lose a quarter teaspoon. So you, based on your caffeine intake or coffee intake, if you drink Red Bull, if you drink these energy drinks, you need to match that as well. And caffeine also increases the loss of salt through sweat. So, which is another aspect. So if you sweat, you go in the sauna, you exercise a lot, or you just live in a hot temperature, you need to offset what you're losing through sweat by increasing the amount of salt that you eat.
Mm. Okay. So would you say then, if you drink a cup of coffee, then to get back to the sort of normal, to the zero, you would have to take like 1/4 of a teaspoon of salt electrolytes?
Yeah, 1 cup of coffee would be 1/8 of a teaspoon, 2 cups would be 1/4, and then 4 cups would be 1/2 of a teaspoon.
Right. Okay. Yep. Good. Thank you. Mm-hmm. And so, okay, magnesium, a big topic. Many people like to supplement with it. I think the general mantra is that half of the people are depleted in or deficient in magnesium. It's also one of my favorite minerals. I've noticed a great improvement in my headaches. I'm a former migrainer or ex-migrainer. Also salt improved, electrolyte improved the symptoms a lot, but magnesium is my number one favorite supplement for that. What's the story of magnesium? Why most people feel good when they are eating it? Are we actually all depleted in magnesium, or is it a salt? Maybe it's a salt deficiency that makes us depleted in magnesium. What's like your view on this based on all of the research that you've done?
Yeah, there's a couple ways to measure magnesium status. When you look at the studies that test for blood levels, anywhere between 20 and 30% of the general population would be considered deficient just on a blood level. But then when you start looking at better tests, like the gold standard IV magnesium load test, which essentially it's an IV, they give about 400 milligrams of magnesium over 4 hours, and then they see how much comes out over the next usually 16 to 24 hours. If the body is holding on to a lot of that, that means the body is deficient. It's a great test, and it makes very good intuitive sense for any nutrient that is primarily regulated by the kidneys. Of course, if someone has poor kidney function, this test isn't the best because, again, we're looking at what's coming out in the urine. But if you don't see a lot coming out in the urine and it's being retained, a lot of it's being retained, then you are typically magnesium deficient. The best blood test that actually has been shown to match IV magnesium load test is mononuclear blood cell magnesium. So if you want a blood test that will capture the body status of magnesium, that is the best one to get. It's just typically not ordered by doctors and probably pretty hard to even find a lab that will be able to do it. So.
Okay. Do you supplement with magnesium? And if yes, what's your protocol for that?
So I get 50 milligrams of magnesium per scoop of Relight. I usually have 2 scoops of that per day. And then I do take a magnesium combination of magnesium glycinate and malate. Usually I'll do one or two of those per day. So that would be anywhere from another 120 to 240 milligrams of magnesium. I like to take it usually like lunch and dinner, just as like when I remember, but it's important to try to not take a lot of pure fat or a lot of fiber with magnesium because both can bind to magnesium. The fat can form magnesium soaks and the fiber just will bind it based on its inherent physiological properties. So you just want to make sure that you're not taking too much fat or too much fiber when you take your magnesium supplement.
Okay, great. And what do you think are the best benefits of magnesium supplement that you've seen?
Well, right away, I would say improvements in heart arrhythmias, in things also like mitral valve prolapse, headaches and migraines, photosensitivity, muscle spasms and cramps. Those are very common and many times improved with magnesium. Blood pressure as well will improve very quickly with magnesium. Kidney stones as well. Usually they use magnesium citrate for that. I mean, the citrate has some benefit on its own, but magnesium also does as well for kidney stones. And then things that you wouldn't think of symptomatically, like heart failure, sudden death has been reduced with magnesium, improving magnesium intake, arterial calcification. So magnesium is nature's natural calcium channel blocker and will reduce calcification of the arteries. So you can't see that. It's not a symptom per se, but you'll see it on a coronary artery calcium score. So that's a really important, and the studies have shown around 450 to 500 milligrams is associated with the lowest coronary artery calcium scores, as opposed to as you go lower than that, the CAC score goes higher. And then, just in general, heart disease, kidney function, things like that.
Right, great, thank you. At the end, I would like to ask, as a cardiovascular research scientist, what is your sort of number one thing that you would like to people to understand about the health of the heart and long term, preserving health for long term? What is the main message or main tip that you would give to the listeners?
Well, if I had to just give one, I would say consuming a nutrient-dense diet is the most important. Like a lot of people get tied up with, is this, should we add this berry? Should we add this green smoothie? But ultimately, your body has to get enough nutrients, minerals, vitamins to function properly. So the number one thing I think people need to do is consume nutrient-dense foods. Because that is like the minimal threshold of what people should be doing, so at least your body can do the functions that it's supposed to be doing.
Perfect. Thank you. And when people want to learn more about salt, minerals, and everything that you talk about, where can they find more information?
Yeah, the Salt Fix is probably the best resource for just sodium in general. My book, Win Here, that is probably the best resource on salt improving athletic performance. So those two books I would say would be the best resources for salt. And then the Mineral Fix would probably be the best resource for magnesium.
Perfect. And your main socials are?
At Dr. James Dinick is my main social tag, and that's for Instagram, Twitter, and then for Facebook, it's Dr. James Dinick Lantonio.
Well, thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.